So we're joined on 2SER by Gordy herself. Congratulations on your new song, Broke Scene. So we'll start by talking about that track a little bit. What's the kind of key message you were trying to get through with that track?
Yeah, thanks for the kind words. I guess that track, I'd been like asleep and I woke up like, and this has happened to me a couple of times where it's like I've woken up from a nap and I just like go straight into writing a song, and it kind of comes out before I really know what it is. And then it's sort of not till, you know, I sit down afterwards and really pour over the lyrics that, you know, it's kind of like coughing up puzzle pieces and then assembling it in some kind of shape. And I think it's sort of that, you know, I guess the central vibe of it is about self-sabotage, you know, and watching people around me grow up and grow older and, you know, how their lives change, not always for the better. And yeah, I think like, I don't know, watching sort of parts of people fade away, I guess, was kind of the main, I don't know, the main like thought behind it. And, you know, looking at self-sabotage, like the kind of last section of the song is imagining this scene where, you know, this person has thrown a match over their shoulder, you know, blown up their house and is just running off into the distance. So it's not supposed to be a happy ending, but yeah, I guess it's like that kind of life that some people, or a moment that some people are having where they sort of feel like a bit trapped or something.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I can see that like makes sense when I think about the song, like it all kind of puzzles together like that. You've dubbed the song a Yum-Cha fever dream. I read that in an email. Do you reckon you could elaborate on it a bit? Because I didn't get Yum-Cha when I listened to it, but I'd love for you to enlighten me.
Yeah. So I had like, I was in the middle of this writing week in Sydney, probably not far from where you're sitting, in Chippendale at this space called Phoenix Central Park. And it's a really beautiful venue. They put on like regular live shows. I'm actually playing one there this week. And it's a place owned by this family called the Nielsens, and they put on, yeah, these free shows for people, but obviously pay the artists. And it's a really, yeah, it's a really amazing space, and they've been really good to me. And we reached out to them, and I'd already played a couple of shows there, and I was like, would you guys be up for me doing like a writing residency there? And so I did a week there in 2021, and it was basically like 8 straight days, I think, of just going in every day, you know, as if it was like an office job, and trying to really churn out as much music as I could. And one morning I was like, I need to just like have a break. And so I went out and had some Yum-Cha. And I had, you know, it's like you have all those like delicious dumplings and like a few Tsing Taos. And then I got back into the writing room and I was like, shockingly, I don't actually feel like writing any music right now. So I was like, I'll just like close my eyes for like just 2 minutes. And anyway, I like lay down and woke up an hour later and was like in this like cold post-nap sweat. And I kind of woke up dreaming about this song, and I just sort of like, no one else was there. So I just woke up, picked up this guitar, kind of wrote the central riff that you hear at the start of the song. And then I like had this drum loop from my friend, Chris Messina, who I worked on my last record with. And I kind of like, you know, flew that into the session, put some delay on it. And I kind of like recorded a bass line, and then I just looped it, and it was just on loop around this room. While I basically wrote all the lyrics and melody in a couple of hours. And it was strange that like I hadn't actually sort of like spoken to anybody, you know, like I'd sort of like woken up from this dream, gone straight into this like songwriting thing, and then finished the song sort of within a few hours. And then I was like, that was such a random day.
The power of a good Yum-Cha.
Yeah, I exactly. reckon.
So you co-produced this song with Ethan Gruska, who's worked with Phoebe Bridgers and Bon Iver, who you recently toured with. How was this like collaborative experience? Did you have the same vision for the track heading into it? Did it change much in the studio?
Yeah, it was actually like it was such a beautiful experience. I really loved working with Ethan. I've, you know, been a big fan of his work for a really long time. And when I recorded the song, like when I wrote the song, I recorded a lot of it that day. Like I recorded that central guitar riff and had the drum machine in there. I recorded all the vocals and some like synths and stuff. But then I sort of felt like I hadn't written that last section of the song. It was sort of just like an empty like jam section. And I just felt like, I sort of felt like the song was like, in terms of production, maybe like 50% finished. And on the one hand, I was like, maybe I'll just, you know, do it myself and take it all the way to the finish line. But I was like, I don't know, I kind of want like a fresh perspective on it. And so I was in LA for a lot of last year from June onwards. And yeah, I hit up Ethan and I was like, I've got this song and I think like you'd be perfect for it, just to kind of bring some new vibes to. And we sort of did it over the space of like 6 weeks. I'd go over to his house for like a couple of hours, you know, for an afternoon. And yeah, we both would, like, he has such an eclectic mix of like instruments in his little studio. And so like, we just pick up different stuff and start playing. And gradually we just sort of like layered up all this different stuff. And he like recorded some really beautiful, you know, piano parts. And the sort of like, it's like a bit of a random instrumental solo moment in the middle of the song. And that was like him noodling on this fretless bass, which like the fretless bass gets a really bad rap for being pretty uncool. But but as soon as he played it, I was like, I never thought I'd have a fretless bass on a song of mine. But yeah, I'm stoked about it. So it was a really nice partnership. And I think he and I are really like musically very like kindred spirits. So it was yeah, really like easy process from start to finish. We kind of just had to decide when we were done, you know.
You just keep going for ages.
Yeah.
Make it a 20-minute track.
Exactly, maybe next time.
Looking forward to hearing that then. So your sound and the stuff you put out now, it's pretty unique and it's changed a lot since you first started your career and like your earlier releases. Do you think, how do you feel like you've kind of changed and evolved as a musician since starting?
Yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, like anyone in any industry, I've just learned so much. You know, I remember like when I recorded my first song that got on the radio, that was in, you know, 2014, the song called Nothing's As It Seems. And I remember being in the studio and just like, I didn't even know how to get sound from, you know, the room into a computer. Like I really had no clue. I just knew how to write songs. And, you know, production kind of wasn't something that was even on my radar in those early days. Like I was like, I'm gonna write the song on the piano or the guitar and then, you know, work with someone who can bring the best out of it, I guess, like in the traditional production sense. But you know, I guess as the years have gone on, I've worked with lots of different people, and I just learn, like your rate of learning during those periods is kind of exponential. And yeah, I guess my second record was really the first time I'd properly sort of tested that in myself. And I sort of, you know, similar to Broke Scene, I guess, I had a record that was like, I don't know, 50% completed in a production sense. And I worked with these two friends of mine to sort of, you know, totally get it to the finish line. So, yeah, I guess like, you know, the music has changed just by virtue of me doing more of it, you know, doing more of the production. I think that like this next batch of music, Broke Scene included in that, that's kind of coming, you know, I've really tried to experiment with how to, you know, for example, like how to suggest a chord instead of being like, here's a C, here's an F, here's a G, you know, here's an A minor, whatever. Like, and I think that, you know, we really achieved that in Broke Scene by sort of having such a like fluid bass line and, you know, having like working really hard on particular inversions of chords where, you know, you still kind of get the root note essentially, but like it's not being sort of shoved down your throat with like just a sub bass semi brief or something. So I don't know, like that's all getting a bit detailed, but but yeah, I think like just hopefully the music's getting like, you know, a little more like complex in the right ways without trying too hard to do that.
No, yeah, I do agree, it's getting more complex, but in a really good way, like a really Thanks. Personally really enjoy the way it's going.
Thanks.
No worries. So we'll talk a little bit about the tours you've been on recently. You've just finished a string of shows with Bon Iver. You played here at the ICC. It was awesome, by the way. Are there any kind of particular memories or moments that stick out to you when you think back on these shows? Like, what was the most memorable part of it?
Yeah, it was a wonderful tour. Like, I feel very, you know, I first met all the Bon Iver guys in sort of 2015 or 16. I went over and sang with them on the Jimmy Fallon show, and then I opened for them in New York, and they had me on a few festivals, you know, in Eau Claire in Wisconsin, and then over in Berlin. And they've always been so good to me. And when I originally got the support for that gig in 2020, what a year, but I was really glad when I, you know, when it was kind of rebooked like all these years later. But I think like the audiences that Bon Iver draw are, you know, like my dream audience to play to, because, you know, they're people that really love music but are sort of up for being a little bit challenged, I think, which is really cool. You know, they're like beautiful, intelligent, emotional audience, and those are my favorite crowds to play to. The Sydney shows, to be honest, were the highlight, because it was like I walked out onto the stage like, and it felt like, you know, I mean, it's the lamest thing ever, but literally the only thing I could think about was like the Quidditch World Cup in the movie depiction of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, because it was just like, it felt like it went on forever.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like playing to that many people. I sort of thought, oh, it'll probably be, you know, I'll probably have to try and wrangle the crowd a little bit as the opener, but it was like you could have heard a pin drop, which was, you know, it's such an amazing feeling as an artist to be on stage and to feel, you know, like you're being received in that way. So it was awesome. It was a really like hectic 3 weeks for us, you know, me and my touring crew. And like in the space of, I think, 8 days, we had 2 shows in Sydney. I went back to Melbourne, had a show in Hobart, had a full band rehearsal in Sydney. I had a show for Pride in Sydney. I had a friend's wedding in Orange. Jesus. I had a festival show in Bathurst. I had a show with Bon Iver in Perth, and then got back to Melbourne.
Oh my God.
So I basically died after that, and then resurrected myself with the Brisbane and Melbourne shows. But it was really nice. You know, the last night of the tour in Melbourne, we all just kind of had drinks backstage, and, you know, Sean Carey, who's one of the guys that plays in Bon Iver, we did a lot of touring together over 2018, and so it was just, it was sort of really nice family vibes, you know, having such a like good time catching up. So yeah, I loved it. I'm sad it's over.
Yeah, that's so cute. And yeah, I could hear the way that you spoke about them at the show. It felt very family vibes. I was getting that vibe. It was so cute to hear, and it's so good. I'm so glad you had such a good time. And the ICC is crazy like that. Like, I couldn't imagine being on the stage, but even standing on the floor and then looking back at how you just can't see the end of it. I couldn't imagine having to look outwards at it. It's freaky.
Yeah, I know. I had friends that were like sitting in the nosebleeds, and one of my mates was like, she's like, I felt like I was like about to fall to my death, like when I was trying to get up and get a beer, because it's like so steep.
It is. It's a bit freaky. And you mentioned the Pride shows as well that you played. You played a few shows around Sydney to commemorate for Sydney World Pride. How was that atmosphere? And it was probably a bit different to the Bon Iver crowd. How was that experience for you?
It was really beautiful. Like, I, you know, the main gig I played was at the Columbian on the rooftop, and I just did it solo. And I sort of felt a bit funny going in, because, like, you know, Pride is so synonymous with like partying. And I was like, I'm about to get up and play, you know, 75 minutes of acoustic guitar music. But, you know, I don't know, it was the pause that people needed from the partying. But it was really beautiful. You know, I've had like my own journey to queerness, and, you know, my second record kind of details a lot of that. But I, you know, still celebrating Pride for me is, it made me quite emotional being on stage and you know, looking out to the crowd and lots of people who that was resonating with, because, you know, like, I think before I'd come to terms with my queerness, like, I just knew Pride as like something where 16-year-olds went and got drunk, you know, in March in Sydney. And now, like, it's such an important part of my life, and it's, you know, it's something that is an everyday practice, is having pride when you're a queer person, and, you know, having pride in a queer relationship. But it was, you know, it was really cool to just get up and like celebrate that, and the crowd there was sort of so, you know, open, and, you know, it was almost like family vibes in a different way, where it was like this, yeah, this sort of chosen family where people were really, I don't know, really up for like sharing in sort of vulnerability. And I think when you're playing to a room of queer people, you know that everyone in there's had some sort of pretty heavy journey that they've been on in their lives. And so it was nice to just like come together and celebrate a little bit.
That's so beautiful. It makes you feel all warm inside. That's so cute. I love that. I've got my last question for you, and then I'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of your day. But you've kicked off 2023 to a running start with those tours, the Pride shows, the new single. What have you got coming for the rest of the year? What's on the cards for you?
It's a great question. I am trying to sort of like split a lot of time between Australia and LA. So I'm going to be going back to LA in April, and I mean, just, you know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say whatever, I guess, but low-key, I'm just working on an album. And that is, hopefully, like, I don't know, on the horizon for either, like, later this year or early next year. So I've got, like, a whole lot of music that, we're just working out the best way to get it out into the universe. So there'll be much more coming.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate your time. That there was Gordy chatting all about her new single and her recent touring experiences. You can check out her new single, Broke Scene, on all streaming services, or watch the music video on YouTube. It's pretty cool.